Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back here during the 6 o'clock hour. We're going to talk about a subject that's really very serious, seeing all the stories we have in the press about workers who are shooting up their workplace, about people who are committing suicide, but first killing their families and then committing suicide, the violence taking place, and how much of it is tied to the economic depression and how that leads to human depression and anxiety. And it's not just, and we're going to talk about what we can do about it and give you some ideas as well with our guests. I'll introduce you in a moment. But first, we got to give you a traffic report, the last of the day, to see what's happening out there on the roads. I want to remind you that support for WEAA's traffic is provided by GM Corporate. GM is offering the Total Confidence Plan. Details and limitations at gmconfidence.com. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. Be careful out there on the roads. We are talking about something else we have to be careful of, is what is happening in this economy of ours. And there's some statistics that I read today that were pretty shocking, that the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline is getting 35% more calls this year than last year. That for every percent the unemployment rate goes up, there's at least 47,000 people who die of heart attacks. That goes up by half. Nearly 1,200 committed suicide and 800 are murdered. And there's violence inside of families and tension. So what is going on here? And we're going to talk about that with our guest this hour. Joining me in the studio and helping me co-host this hour is my friend and colleague Anthony McCarthy. His show airs each Friday here at 5 p.m. It's always a pleasure to have him in the studio. He's stuck with each other all day long here. Dr. Scott Anderson is with us. He's Associate Medical Director of the Retreat at Shepherd Pratt. And Dr. Nancy Glass is Associate Professor at the Johns Hopkins School of Nursing and Associate Director of the Johns Hopkins Center for Global Health. And you can join us here at 410-319-8888. Make a comment and pledge at the same time, 410-319-8888. You're looking about to say something, Anthony, were you? No. Okay, you had that look on your face. So let's talk about this connection. I mean, we don't know why this man and his family died in Towson at this point. But we've seen violence on the rise, and we know there's easy access to guns in America. It's a separate but very connected issue, I think, in our culture. And let's talk about what we understand about this and its effect on familial violence and why this surge is taking place now, do we think? Nancy Glass, can I start with you?
Sure, thank you.
It's good to have you with us. Thank you.
It's good to be here. My research has focused for the last 10 years looking at how access to safe and affordable housing and employment, including health insurance, can reduce violence, and specifically domestic violence or intimate partner violence. And in working with families, what we see, especially in my case working with women, they're making very difficult decisions about staying in an abusive relationship because they don't have other places to go. They don't have housing, safe housing. They're fearful of losing their jobs and not having their health insurance, so they need to stay with the partner who has the job and has the health insurance for themselves and their children. So it may put them in a situation where there's an increased risk of violence and severity of the violence, and it may escalate a situation where they would have chosen to leave that relationship and seek health and a community service program. But because of these complex issues, they're not able to make that decision to leave.
And I mean, and this goes across all class lines, I think.
It goes across all class lines. I function in a couple of different capacities at Shepherd Pratt, where I run our high-end premier unit, which is basically taking care of very well-heeled folks who can afford to pay out of pocket for their care, and also run the research program for Shepherd Pratt, focusing on treatment of psychotic disorders and mood disorders. And what we're seeing is an increased number of people coming into our program who have been very high wage earners who have lost jobs. Somebody actually who's been a divorce attorney who's watched business go down significantly because, as Nancy was pointing out, people wind up staying in relationships longer, perhaps even than they should, because of the economic necessity. And that can precipitate lots more drama going on within the household.
I mean, go ahead, Anthony.
No, I think, Mark, I was listening to your guests, and it's amazing to me over the Easter holiday and Lenten season, I visited a lot of churches and I spoke to a lot of folks. And I have to tell you, Mark, as we've been seeing these headlines every week about some tragedy, some family that has been touched by this horrible gun violence and suicide and murder, you know what I find even more disturbing and tragic is the number of people I talk to who seem to have a certain level of understanding of what these families are going through. Just the sheer weight emotionally, spiritually, of the economy right now. And I don't want to oversimplify the things that are going on in these families and these relationships and say it's the economy and that's what's driving it. But that certainly, it appears in a lot of these cases to be one of those key ingredients to what sets off this tragic series of events. And it has amazed me. It has really touched my heart that so many people seem to be identifying with that desperation that some of these families obviously are feeling. And then we see this acted out, whether it's in Binghamton, New York, or right here in Towson or Frederick. There appears to be this added pressure and weight of debt and this perceived desperation of how are we going to make it.
I'd like to hear from our listeners here at 410-319-8888. And your thoughts about how this economy affects people you know, affects your family, affects the tensions in your life, what it's done to a lot of us. I think that it creates more than we realize and gets people sometimes to the breaking point. 410-319-8888. And the question is, I'm curious how you think we begin to address this. You know, I mean, we know it exists, and we've seen some, I've been reading some horrendous stories from across the country and talking to people here, even on this program, who get angry. We talk getting angry at their children and striking out, and that all this is going out of the frustrations that people have. So let's talk about what is an answer? What is a response that we have? We know the issue's there. I mean, so what do we do, Nancy Glass? I mean, how do you?
Well, I think as a community, we have to prioritize not reducing services to, vital services like mental health services, counseling programs, job training programs. I think when the economy is reduced, we tend to target those programs that we see as entitlements or social service programs, which are sorely needed at this time. Many of the people that are losing their jobs are also losing their health insurance and then will lose their access to any kind of mental health services. And the opportunity to have access to a counselor or a psychiatrist is, in many of these cases, may be able to prevent these issues.
And you raise an interesting point here, because when you start talking these things going, we see cuts in social programs, cuts to mental health programs, and we're talking about people who also are affected, who are people who without the health insurance to begin with to get these services. Let me tackle that in a second. Let me go right to the phones. Since some folks calling in, let's get their thoughts in the air at 410-319-8888. And Bruce, in your car, you're on the air.
Mark, how you doing?
Well, Bruce, welcome.
I just would like to refer back to, what you guys are talking about and how people are reacting to this economy and to a lot of their perceived notions and their feelings, and I'd like to kind of push it back when you were talking to Woody Curry last week.
Yes.
I am a, for the lack of a better term, a graduate of Woody's system. And if you recall, Woody's premise, and I think if more people, got on board with this sort of thing, there's nothing out there that you can't handle that's going to kill you. And you have to accept change, and you have to understand that it's your feelings.
Somehow we lost Bruce. Bruce, if you want to call back, we'll get you right back on the air. I don't know how that happened. 410-319-8888 is the number here. I apologize, Bruce. Bruce was referring to Woody Curry, who runs the station who came on talking about his fairly unique way of addressing addiction.
Addiction, which
he's an amazing guy, and part of that, what he was talking about, his philosophy was kind of very Eastern in its look, and he was talking about how when he works with people, he may have this great quote, and I love this one quote I've been using ever since. He said, it's not the trap that kills the rat, it's the rat's lust for the cheese. We have to take responsibility for what we can control, and think about our own lives and how to address those. And I think so. And Bruce is saying it's a program where people stay for 2 years to fight their addiction, whether it's alcohol or drugs or whatever it is. So Bruce is saying he had gone through Woody's program, and so I mean that there's the level here that people have to have access to places like the station to address the issues they face, and they don't. So how do we? So the question I'm looking for is, how do we get to that place? I mean, what do we? We have to create somehow an understanding that that is more of what we need, in the society. And when we talk about cuts, we're always willing to say, yes, let's cut the social programs first and let them go by the wayside.
Well, I think that there's an ongoing fantasy that mental health doesn't have great value. Because when we do studies, our results aren't as easy as when we're doing studies on hypertensive drugs, mm-hmm. where you can see that somebody's blood pressure is going down. Our ratings of mental health are much more subjective. And as a result, I worry that we don't put as much faith into the results. One of the areas that I work a lot with is within treatment-resistant depression. And one of the things I've worked with has been a device that's an implantable device for treatment-resistant depression called a vagus nerve stimulator. And what's interesting is we've gotten the same result for psychiatric patients as they have for neurology patients with intractable epilepsy. You can get any insurance company to pay for this device for intractable epilepsy, but not for treatment-resistant depression.
I think, Mark, there still remains the stigma attached to mental health issues and treatment. And as much as I know that so many people are crying out for help and assistance, the pressure gets to a point where they don't necessarily know how to process it, there still remains. And I hate to say this, even in the African-American community, it appears to be so strong, this resistance to reaching out and getting help. Not help for services, but help specifically for mental health services.
On that note, I'm first going to take a very short break. Carol, who's just called in, we want to hear what you have to say, so please hold on for a few minutes. We're going to come to your call. We can hold on for a few minutes. 410-319-8888 as we talk about the depression in American society, especially coming with the economic depression we're facing, and what we can really do about it. 410-319-8888. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. We're talking about the rise in suicide and violence and domestic violence in this country. That is coupled with this economic depression we're facing. We are joined in studio by my host and co-host, Anthony McCarthy, who hosts the show here on Fridays at 5 p.m., Dr. Scott Aronson, Associate Medical Director of the Retreat at Shepherd Pratt, Dr. Nancy Glass, Associate Professor in the Johns Hopkins School of Nursing and Associate Director of the Johns Hopkins Center for Global Health. 410-319-8888 is the number here. And Carol in Baltimore, thank you for holding on. You're on the air. Hi, Carol. You're on the air.
Being a mom with a couple of kids, that I think nowadays everybody just has really high expectations of themselves. And if everyone can't have the cell phone, if everyone can't have the nice car, play all the different sports, it's really hard. I'm not saying everybody should, but it seems like people have a really hard time nowadays just kind of accepting who they are and just kind of, you know, going with what they have instead of saying, I need to have more. I'm not saying that's a good or bad thing. I'm just saying that it's unfortunate that people feel that way because there's a lot of peer pressure. Mm-hmm. Kids have it, and I see it happening with all of the adults, that it's always more and more and more, bigger and better. And I'm not saying those folks are bad. I'm just saying that I think it's just hard for people because that's just the environment that we live in nowadays.
Now, have you been finding that in conversations with your friends? I mean, what are people saying in response to that to you?
Feels like that. It's like, oh God, I've signed up for this. I signed up for that sport. Oh, I have this car. And it's not even just like the middle to upper. It's, you know, just the regular folks out there that have two incomes that are still trying to make sure that, you know, they have the best car, the most, you know, the car that's like the most recent that has all the gadgets, and these are good people. It's just that I think that we've just been living in the times that people just think that that's normal, instead of just saying, hey, I'm happy with my job where I make XYZ dollars, and we're going to save money, and we're going to do the best we can, and we're going to have happy and healthy children, and just be like that, and not worry about, oh my God, we need to make, you know, 100 grand a year, 200 grand a year to make sure that we're happy, because money does not buy happiness. And again, material things do not buy happiness, but I think that's kind of the society that we're in. It's a very materialistic society.
Yep.
And I don't fault those folks, because I'm living in that generation, but I just find that if people would just be really accepting of themselves and their peers, people might find that it would maybe relieve some of the stress that folks have out there. Because they don't feel the pressure, or look what I have, and I see it with my kids all the time. Look what I have. I have the phone that you don't have a phone. I have this, you don't have that. And they're kids, so it's more accepting. But, you know, adults do the same thing, just in different ways. Well, and I'm just amazed that, you know, you still go out to eat, and the restaurants are still packed. So, I kind of wonder, like, geez. People, the money's coming from somewhere, or are we just racking up even more credit card bills?
My guess is people are racking up more credit card bills.
Right.
But
it's just unfortunate. I just hope that folks could just say, you know, be more accepting of themselves.
Well, that's essentially what Carol is saying here. I mean, if we come back to the issues that we left with before, which is just that people look at this economic crisis in some ways as, and pick up what our first caller said, as maybe a different way of transforming the way we look at the world, that we are a very materialistic-based society. It's a very consumer-oriented society. Barack Obama said recently that he wants to move the economy away from a consumer-based economy into a different kind of economy that creates things and creates worth rather than just buying stuff all the time. So that's part of the tension we have here is, in our society, is thinking that we have to have more. And I think that kind of is a social kind of malaise that we have as a culture that affects the way we behave.
Well, I think what we value needs to change and needs to be revised. And I got to say that there's part of me that looks at the economic downturn and goes, what an opportunity to allow to allow for growth, that you can value your connections with others. You can value that you do something that has a purpose and not necessarily have to value what kind of car you get to drive or how many televisions you have in your house.
I mean,
well, I think that the issue for many people is not what kind of television they have in their house, it's if they have a house. And if they have a safe place for their children to sleep and for them to sleep, and if they have the skills to get another job, and I think that these add a layer of complexity in people's lives where they're not able to make the choices they would make for their own health and safety and their children's health and safety if they had access to affordable housing, if they had access to a job with a living wage. And so I think people are in very difficult situations, and they're not able to leave abusive relationships when they may have wanted to, or they're not able to take risk in their lives for a new job or move to a new state. So I think that for many people that I'm working with, it's not about wishing they had the cell phone. It's about wishing that they had a safe place for their children to sleep.
So this is, I mean, we're really talking about a culture where both these things exist at different extremes here. Mm-hmm. People learning to live with less and less consumer, and less of a consumerist kind of way of living. But the other side is the reality is that we have tens of millions of people in the United States of America who are living the way you're talking about at this moment. And one of the things that comes with that, I mean, this rise in domestic violence. And let's talk a bit about this. I'm curious what our listeners think about this at 410-319-8888. This, an exponential rise in shelters for women and children fleeing abusive relationships, and the abusive relationships on the rise, and family violence is on the rise. The last statistics I was reading this morning. Let's just start with men for a minute. There's something about male ego and men's role in society that's been profoundly affected by this, by that in itself, but also by that's been exacerbated by this crisis. I mean, male unemployment at this point is higher than female unemployment in the United States. Those jobs that fell apart were the jobs that men had in labor and construction and other places. There's something going on here with that that I think that is profound, and somehow we have to figure a way to get to.
Mark, I think when I watch and I observe families that are facing these economic challenges, there are such added pressures because of this economic downturn. Not only are men feeling the pressure that they are not able to provide for their families, but oftentimes those the family tensions are heightened because there is a certain level of frustration for everyone that the ends are not being met in these families on both sides, from their spouses as well as the husbands, and disappointment. What I try to teach people, what I try to tell people, the same thing, Mark, that I try to live by. I had to go through a period of mourning the lifestyle I had. I had to let go of the $100,000 plus salary I was receiving and learn to live within, not only live within my means, but what was necessary for me to live.
Live within a new means.
That's right, a very real new means. And I tell my friends oftentimes who are finding themselves, and you'd be stunned at the number of high-end job and wage earners who are losing, who are just being going into their office and being told, we can't afford to have you here anymore. And therefore, their health insurance is impacted. Therefore, their ability to pay tuition for their children's private schooling is impacted. I mean, it's a horrific situation. Now, oftentimes, I don't want to say we marginalize it because our favorite restaurant is closing down, or, you know, I can't get an upgrade on the certain car that I have. People are at the real grassroots, rubber hitting the road level, finding frustrations that are almost unbearable. When they cannot provide for their children, when they cannot they go for job interview after job interview. And what I've tried to tell people is that we have to learn to mourn that lifestyle. We become a consumer driven, I need the best watch, the best car, the best cell phone society, and I need the latest plasma television. And I know there are families who don't even have televisions, who don't have a computer, who don't have a car. But I'm telling you that people have to learn to mourn, who are middle class and higher income wage earners. They have to learn to mourn that lifestyle. Otherwise, we do see this horrific situation like these families that we've
seen. We're
going
to take a break, but when we come back, I really want to ask Scott Aronson and Nancy Glass to kind of talk about the issue of male violence against women and children and the rise in that and how we address that in this economic crisis. I think that's a very serious, critical issue that we're going to tackle as soon as we return from this. Take a brief break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. Anthony McCarthy sitting in the studio with me, along with Dr. Scott Aronson, Associate Medical Director of the Retreat at Shepherd Pratt, Dr. Nancy Glass, Associate Professor of the Johns Hopkins School of Nursing, and Associate Director of the Johns Hopkins Center for Global Health. 410-319-8888. Your thoughts about this issue this hour. Scott, we were going to break. You were saying something I found really interesting.
Well, I think even though Nancy and I are talking about different ends of the socioeconomic continuum, we're talking about the same phenomenon. The same phenomenon is that profound sense of helplessness that this kind of economy can engender in folks, and doesn't allow them to feel that they have alternatives. And at times, a lot of people resorting to desperate measures to deal with life stresses.
Well, I think that is a component, but I also think that violence against women has existed for a very long time in our society. And I think that there is a link to the issue of power and control in a relationship. And if one partner loses their job or is under a level of stress that increases, they may feel like they're not in control. And if it's a violent relationship and they feel like they're losing control, it may escalate the violence. And so that's where we may see the a part of the economic impact in these already relationships that were already stressed and already violent. I want to make sure that we don't indicate to listeners that men who are losing jobs become violent, because
right.
that's not what
right.
we see
right.
in right. society. We see in relationships that already are stressed or already have a level of psychological or physical or sexual violence that this may escalate the situation where there seems a feeling of loss of power and control in that relationship. So I think a critical part in our community is just like you're feeling at public radio about, I was reading a report by the Pew Commission, that nonprofits are feeling a 17% decrease in resources to do the work that's mm-hmm. really important. And so our shelter programs like the House of Ruth are feeling that decrease, our batterer intervention programs, our mental health services, and our other services that work with families are feeling these decreases. And as a community, we really need to prioritize supporting these programs. To make sure that the people who need these services are being able to access them.
It's just become a very, we're at a critical point in some ways with all this, I think. I mean, in programs you've done and other people I've heard having conversations about the kind of the pain that many women have being stuck in relationships, being fearful of leaving, and the complexity of going back and forth mm-hmm. with abusive men. And I think that the hopelessness that has been engendered in society only exacerbates the issue of violence inside of families.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
I totally agree. I'm doing a study now where we're following 300 families over a year and a half to look how access to housing improves their health outcomes and reduces their risk for violence, repeat violence. These are women and children who had escaped an abusive relationship. And at 6 months, at our six-month interview, we may be talking to a family who is completely separate and safe and in housing. At 12 months, we may find the situation where she's lost that job and she's returned to the abusive partner.
Oh, what you're saying is that housing that is available for women and children who have been in an abusive relationship getting out, you're not talking about families once they have housing, the violence goes on, you're saying that you're talking about housing for women who need to get...
I'm talking about women are in their own independent housing,
right.
having a job after they may have gone to shelter, then you know, having their own safe housing, losing their job, not able to afford the housing, and the alternative for them and for safety of their children is they have moved back with their abusive partner.
Now, this is kind of like not exactly the question of economic depression and human depression I was about to raise, but what you made me think of something here is that we... There must be some ways, and I see some people talking about this in the state legislative session, of intervening early with men, with boys, about violence and women and power. And this is not just an American issue. This is an issue that travels through men and women's issues throughout many societies. But I think we are in a position here in America to kind of really address it in ways others are not.
I think so, and I think, unfortunately, when you see men being violent in relationships, it's usually, unfortunately, a sign of weakness because they don't have they don't feel or have access to other alternatives. And to be able to help boys learn that there are alternatives to violence with conflict resolution or with their own internal frustrations.
Yeah, there's some very positive programs that have been developed globally and nationally from the Family Violence Prevention Fund and our local community and with the World Health Organization, coaching boys to men, looking at using the role of the coaches to really model how do you interact positively with your sisters, your mother, your friends, and so role modeling that role into adulthood, as well as teachers. You know, we have some really good models. It's being accountable to that in our society. And what I'm fearful of is that we start to say, well, the economic stress justify this behavior. The violence is being, we can understand it because we feel this level of stress. But I would suspect in many of these cases where we see this extreme violence of homicide, suicide, that if we look, there's been histories of in those families of violence or other very serious issues. So I want us to be careful not to to link that violence against women is a very complex and multifactored issue, and economics is one component of that.
Right, and the economic crisis we're in may exacerbate the issue.
Exactly.
But you can't, it's not an excuse for
exactly
the violence.
Thank you. That's very important.
You know.
But curiously, I think it becomes an opportunity to deal with some of the underlying problems, because now there's a lot more attention focused on it. And wouldn't it be great if we were able to encourage government agencies to be able to support ongoing care for these folks.
And that's the key. I think that really is the key, to take this as a community as an opportunity to start to really look closely at these cases and investigating them and looking back and seeing if we miss, where there's some missed opportunities to intervene, where we could have helped this family.
I mean, what do we know about outcomes for programs, and this is really going away from the economics issues, but I'm curious, as you raise these issues, about the work done with men who are violent towards women. I mean, there's the issue that's probably the most important issue of the safety of women and children and having a safe place to go and be able to rebuild. But what about the men who commit the violence and how you approach that in work, whether it's therapy or some other way of addressing the violence? Do you have experience with that at Shepherd Pratt?
I personally haven't had experience with it, and I suspect that what you'll find is it's the same thing as with any other bad behavior, is it depends on what your commitment is to it. You know, it's how many psychiatrists does it take to change a light bulb? You know, one, but the light bulb has to want to change. And so it depends on what somebody's commitment is and whether there is, you know, whether there's something in it for the guy to get treatment. Because the problem is it's set up for some of these guys that it's, you know, it's more of a stick than a carrot approach.
Well, we have to take a break. I want to come back. I really want to hear from Anthony McCarthy, and I want to hear from Nancy Glass as well when we come back. And you out there, 410-319-8888, with your thoughts on violence in men. And we are switching gears a bit from economic expression and taking us to a really critical point here. What do we do? And what do you do about with young men in your own family? 410-319-8888. We'll be right back to talk about that and more. I will remind you, The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union offering a full range of financial services. MeQ was formed in 1936 to help people during the Great Depression, and over 70 years later, they're still there to help people during difficult times. More information is available at mecu.com. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, here with Dr. Nancy Glass, Associate Professor of the Johns Hopkins School of Nursing and Associate Director of the Johns Hopkins Center for Global Health, Dr. Scott Aronson, Associate Medical Director of the Retreat at Shepherd Pratt, Anthony McCarthy, of course, here with me in the studio, host of the Anthony McCarthy Show, which airs here each Friday at 5 p.m., and you at 410-319-8888. Make a comment and make a pledge at the same time. 410-319-8888. I'd like to know what you all think about the conversation we're having now and what you may have gone through yourself with the issue of domestic violence, what you think we do to change the attitude of men and boys in society, whether we're talking about economic depression or just human depression here. And I'm curious at where we left off, Nancy Glass. I want you to pick up on this and your experience in this. I mean, it sometimes seems to me to be harder, from the interviews I've done over the last 16 years, for men to make a break with violence and domination than it is for women to get out of the relationship itself.
I think that's true. I think that, again, for men to choose to perpetrate violence against an intimate partner has a lot of issues for that man before he made that, decided to be violent. So we as a society need to recognize what kind of messages young men are receiving around gender equity, around their role in a family. And we need to really take responsibility for those messages. And the existing treatments, although some have reported success, better intervention program, mm-hmm. you know, the data's still out. We don't have a proven method to really change consistently these batterers into non-batterers.
So there are no proven methods to stop people who perpetrate violence, who for whatever reason have become violent human beings, whatever has happened in their childhood or whatever it is, that we find no way to really make that work?
I think you got to look at what the buy-in is.
And buy-in by whom?
Buy-in by the perpetrator. Buy-in by the batterer. And if there is no buy-in, you will not, no matter what you do, you can send a team of the best-trained folks in the world, and they're just not going to buy it. And the question then becomes, how do you get somebody to buy into the issue? How do you get them to see that what their lifestyle is incredibly destructive to the people they supposedly love, as well as incredibly self-destructive, because it doesn't allow them to achieve the goals that they're looking for in their lives?
It's almost as if what came through to me as two of you were just talking is that our being so enamored with violence and tied into, I think, the ancient concept of patriarchy and taking over and then men dominating society and the change we're having in society where women are now actually coming to the fore here and in many countries around the world, women are kind of standing up and becoming equal parts of society. But that violence in many ways is akin to what our first caller was talking about, what Woody Curry was talking about, to addiction. I mean, in some ways. I mean, it is an addiction to violence, an addiction to that behavior that has to change. And that's...
Well, men or women who use violence, it's successful. They usually get what they want out of using the violence. They usually... That behavior usually results in getting what they want. So it's reinforced. And so it's how to you. I don't want to give the message that it's hopeless, that men are batterers or that there's not a way to work with them. And I think that Scott's correct that showing, you know, the buy-in and showing the impact on their lives and how it impacts their employment. I've been doing a study and interviewing men and the use of workplace resources to perpetrate their violence, like using the company vehicle to stalk their partner. We looked at 11% of those men lost their jobs related to their behavior and also made serious mistakes at the workplace. And once they start to look at those behaviors and see how it's impacting their well-being, I think that's a step forward. And we really have to make sure that those programs are showing the men how this impacts their ability to maintain a job, to maintain their health.
Anthony, go ahead.
I was very curious. How much do we believe that popular culture, whether, and I know people like to point fingers at all those videos and that movie, but recently I went to the movies, took my nieces, and we were watching what I thought was going to be a regular superhero science fiction movie, and it involved what had to be one of the most violent scenes against a woman that I've ever seen. And the theater was filled with children. And I remember
that.
I would prefer not to say just because I don't want us to get into a whole lot, but it was about some superheroes. And when I say it was violent, I mean this man really did a job on this woman. And people were laughing in the theater. And the children were running around. And I remember thinking, Mark, how is a young boy, or even young girls, processing this as we said, because I know how I was processing it. And it amazes me that those images are so powerful. And we, I don't want to say we become comfortable, but it's commonplace enough that it's in enough movies that we could probably name several movies where there is violence perpetrated against women where there is no consequence for that violence.
And I think Anthony, that many people that were in the same movie would not have recognized, or if you had interviewed them after the movie and asked them, did they see violence, they would have said, oh, no, that was, I didn't see that violence. And I think that that is part of the issue, is how we, calling it out as violence and calling it out as not acceptable is part of the issue. We haven't made that distinction for our youth and for ourselves as adults.
Final thought, Scott?
I think that my final thought is that there are three things that make us good people and that make us successful in life. Number one is having a sense of goals. Number two is having some sense of control over something in your life. And number three is having connections. And the more we can help people foster those three legs of the stool, the better their mental health.
Well, this is just the beginning of this, and I do appreciate you coming in, the two of you, at the very last minute and helping this conversation with us. It meant a great deal to us and our listeners. Dr. Scott Aronson and Dr. Nancy Glass, it's been a pleasure to meet both of you and have you in the studio. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And Anthony McCarthy, thank you for doing this with me this hour.
My pleasure. I enjoyed it, Mark.
I know it's a subject that's very near and dear to your heart, and it's good to have you in the studio with me always. And right now, I'm reminding you all to call 410-319-8888. Keep these kind of discussions live on the air. Show your support for WEAA. The Mark Steiner Show is produced by the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Justin Levy and Jessica Phillips. We're engineered today by Mike Nice. Our interns are Christina Arison, Judith Lloyd, Brian Boone, and Jackson Hubalt. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again and podcast any of our past shows, hear new additional interviews, visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care. Support your public radio at WEAA. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by MECU, Baltimore's credit union, and the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development.